Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to District Baseball, District Nats, episode 1.10, I believe. I think I hit that nail on the head. I'm Nick. You can follow me on Twitter at the Coach Moose. He is Trey. You can follow him on Twitter at Reverse2R. So he's in the show at District BSB. It was quite the week in Nationals baseball, really a tale of two series. Before I get to Trey, I just have to say this. For the first time in my entire life, I predicted the Nats to sweep a team. And what do they do but promptly get swept by arguably the worst team in baseball? It was just the most me slash Nats thing to ever happen. I just can't even really describe this week, but that's what we're here to talk about. But Trey, what's going on?
Yeah, man, I predicted a 2-1 series victory for the Nats, and I look great compared to you.
Yeah, I know. But... just way better.
It was a strange week of Nats baseball. It was not looking good through the first five games of this week, and then they managed to salvage it at the end and pull together just a 3-4 record.
Yep.
That was correct. Rather than what was looking like a potential 1-6 or 0-7 week through the first five, because I mean, we hate to do this, but it's been the same thing. The offense just sucks. Okay. Let's get it out of the way now. That's the biggest issue with this team. All right, we're done. It hasn't changed. It's still bad. The pitching basically determines whether or not this team wins.
Yeah. It's just like, you know what you're going to get. It's kind of like the best way to put it. This team can be pretty good, but is also simultaneously somehow not very good. And that's really all you can say. The losing to the Mets is one thing. Getting swept by the Mets is a complete
in disaster. Embarrassing fashion, might I add. I mean, they played sloppy baseball all series. It was like everybody.
Right. And then you see the first game against the Braves, they lose 5-2. Hunter Harvey blows it, his worst game, arguably as a Nat. Three runs in the eighth that broke upset a stellar start from Mitchell Parker, 7 innings, 2 runs. And that we can dive into that bullpen versus leaving Parker out there decision in a little bit. But just, you know, the first four games of the week, you're like, oh man, this is disaster. This is the point where we look back in a couple of months from now saying this is when the wheels fell apart. And what do they do? But they take the next three from the Braves and win the series again.
It's crazy, man.
It's crazy. And again, we'll talk about this towards the end of the episode, but you know, with the Tigers or at the Tigers and then coming home against the Marlins, like, in theory, this should be another week for, you know, maybe a 3-3 week. 4-2 would certainly help, like, just creeping back into playing the way you hope to be playing, want to be playing. You know, the Tigers are a little bit better, but the Marlins are a series you have to win. Yeah. And when you face series, you have to win. You have to win them, but sure as hell cannot get swept.
Yeah, like
if you lose two of three, that's baseball. It happens. Everyone's a professional baseball player at this level. But like, you know, when you are faced with series you have to win, getting swept is not exactly what you want.
Don't get
do.
Swept. Exactly. Yeah. That's like the most important thing. And to add on to that about next week, it's actually, I think the next month or so, the Nats don't play anyone who's currently over 500. Now, I'm sure that will change.
I have it right in front of me if you want me to go through it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that right now the teams that the Nats face for the next month are not over 500. That will, I'm sure someone will get over 500 in
that time. Yeah, there's some close.
Yeah.
So we have three at Detroit coming up this week. Then we're home for three against the Marlins, a day off next Monday. And then we get the Diamondbacks coming to town for three. And then we're on the road for the rest of the month. We're at Colorado for three. We're at San Diego for three, day off on that Thursday, the last Thursday of the month. And then we're at Tampa, a very, very long road trip. So that might be the kind of the monkey
counter
wrench right into this whole thing. Yeah, you should beat these teams, but you're on West Coast swing for 6 days. You know, you're going from DC on Thursday all the way to Colorado for a Friday game, and then Colorado, San Diego, no days off, and then you have a day off going from San Diego to Tampa, but again, you haven't been home. You know, there's all that human element to that you know, baseball schedule besides what's just going on the field, you know. The good news is starting in July, now we're really getting ahead of ourselves now, they get a very long homestand for eight games against the Mets and Cardinals. So, and then at the Mets again. So it goes to your point for the next month, we're recording on June 10th. From now until July 11th, they're not playing a single team above 500.
Yeah. That's why I think right now, playoffs were not a thing at the beginning of the season as an expectation for this team.
Yeah.
However, they are 1.5 games back of a wild card spot right now, as is almost everyone in the National League, just because the National League has been just not good at all.
Not good, Bob.
Yeah. So if you want to make a move, if you want to get to position yourself to potentially make a run for the playoffs, it's now or never. This month stretch is when you need to take advantage of it. Obviously, there's going to be, you know, like we said with the road trip, you know, certain things that you can't control, but like they need to have a winning month, I think is the key here with the opponents if they want to have a chance. Now, obviously, we don't really think that they're even playing for a playoff spot. So, you know, I don't know, but just looking at the records right now and the schedule coming up, this is the time to attack if you're going to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Call up James Wood when he's healthy.
Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation. All right, let's dive into what the hell happened this week. And no matter how much we dive into it, I don't know if we can fully explain that Mets series.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk about it. And I guess the good news is we don't have to talk too much about it because the Nats really did a good job to right the ship shortly thereafter. Basically, you know, we were talking before we were recording, it was just the pitching. This team goes as the pitching goes. Mackenzie Gore had his probably worst start of the year against the Mets, which is a little surprising. But again, it does happen. They lose a close 7-2-8. They tried to mount a comeback late, but ultimately could not. Second game, they lose by a score 6-3. That was something we haven't talked about yet. DJ's Hurs debut.
Oh, yeah.
He made two starts this week. I think the second was a little bit better than the first, but neither I'm, you know, not trying to make this the all negative episode, but I wasn't super impressed by DJ Hurs. But that could just be because he's very young. Like I don't know how many in the grand scheme of things, how many MLB debuts are all that impressive, or, you know, the first handful of starts are all that impressive. I would say it's far more not impressive than impressive. So again, it's not to say that Hurs won't be a quality big league or anything like that. It's just his first two starts weren't all that great. All of the kind of red flags that people pegged of him or for him in the minor leagues crept up, like the walks, the control issues, the you know, all the
lack
things
of
like
competitive
that.
Pitches were the big, right. was the biggest thing.
Exactly. Although he did get squeezed a few times.
I was literally going to point out his second start. I actually thought he did all right. I think he did okay in his second start. And Andy Fletcher behind the plate. It was not just The Nats, by the way. The Braves were livid all day with this guy.
Andy Fletcher, not great.
We are not being
not great
losers. We're not being biased here. He sucked. And probably the inning where Hurs got touched up the most was that second inning. He had two strikeouts.
Yeah.
Got called walks. So, I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
But the first one, I mean, you get the growing pains of a guy who wasn't supposed to be there yet because he wasn't – I think they had planned to keep him down in AAA probably past the trade deadline. But then Williams landing on the injured list kind of forced their hand.
That was the corresponding move that we didn't talk about, Trevor Williams, with the right flexor muscle strain.
Yeah, I think it's the same as Josiah's injury.
Yeah, so probably a month, if not longer. So it'll be interesting to see how quickly they bring him back, if they can try to get something before the trade deadline, like a start or two. But it certainly complicates things. So yeah, that's going to be something
hurts the value for sure.
Yeah. But we'll see if Hurs gets the shot. Obviously Josiah is coming back sooner rather than later. So like flashback to last week when we were talking about potentially trading one. Well, they're probably not going to do that right now, unfortunately, because Josiah comes back, Hurs goes down, and then you just have a normal five-man rotation. You don't really have an odd man out or have the need to go to a six man. But you know, we'll see what happens. Josiah got rocked in his Fredericksburg rehab start. The one thing I will say in his defense, though, that tends to happen a lot.
I don't care. I honestly don't care until he's. When he comes back to MLB and then gets rocked, then I care.
Yeah. By a lot, I mean a lot of pitchers on rehab starts get rocked. Like Verlander got rocked on a rehab start earlier this year. Like it is what it is.
They're trying stuff out. They're trying to get their
feel. It's a bullpen for them. It doesn't count against their stats or money or free agency or
it's like spring training.
Like that. Yeah, exactly. So I won't hold it against him, but I'm a little nervous for Josiah, but
I'm always nervous because I like him a lot. So
exactly. That's
good.
Exactly it.
So Yeah,
and then the final game of the Mets series, it was just Patrick Corbin.
That was kind of what you expect. Yeah, we had like chalked that one up as an L already, but then you're two L's deep and you're like, well, shit.
Yeah, you need Corbin to be the stopper. And he did pitch five innings, but he was certainly not the stopper. The one thing I forgot to mention about the second game in that series is Derek Law did a really good job to cover three innings after a short start from DJ Hurs.
Yeah, Derek Law is good, and I'm tired of people thinking that he's not.
He's not in certain situations.
Yeah, but that's not. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but that's he's still good thing. Overall. That's very much a Davey thing.
We've been, I mean, if you follow us on Twitter,
you should.
Honestly, everybody on Nat's Twitter has been like, why is Derek Law coming in with runners on base every single It's every time. It's not like, it's like pretty much always Derek Law. I actually, yesterday when he came in, I didn't even look or listen, but I was like, Derek Law's coming in. I know he's coming in. I don't even have to see it. And then as soon as I came back from commercial break, who is there on the bump? So yeah, he's just, I mean, Davey always has his guy that he throws to the wolves and just lets it happen. And he's going to throw him out there every other day. If not every, you know, he's going to, I mean, I think he threw three innings and then pitched the next day, if I'm not mistaken. So,
No, he didn't.
He didn't. Okay. Well, that's good.
A day off in between.
At least that's good. Cause he did throw those three innings and I was like, dude, why are we letting him go 50 pitches? But he's been really, really solid and he's been freaking excellent in clean innings. And that's the thing we've been saying all year. So the bullpen in general is better than they were last year, but there's still an A and a B tier for sure.
For sure.
Unfortunately, the Weem dog is not looking so hot. So he might have to go.
I was going to say like his hot seat is got to be very hot. I mean, Tanner Rainey is like
taking the
heat off everyone. But
that's another thing. Like we got three dudes, at least two. Rainey and Nunez are just complete black hole roster spots. Yeah. They don't play. They're just there. And with Rainey, it really doesn't make sense. Just let him go,
because
guys.
You need
over.
An extra arm.
Like, yeah, but like you could. I'd rather have Amos Willingham that from Triple
A. Yeah, you haven't needed that fourth or fifth whatever bench spot. You haven't needed that all that much, but you need that extra arm in the bullpen, so that's
they gotta make a decision about him soon.
yeah So just tying a bow in the Met series, because again, like they did a good job of righting the ship this week. So we're not going to spend too much time talking about all the things that went wrong and how embarrassing it is to get swept by the Mets. But is there anything you wanted to touch on?
Oh yeah, that was just, you know, it's embarrassing, but
yeah,
it would have been a whole lot worse if they didn't take the Braves down. Because yeah, it's, well, I mean, they won that fifth game of the week against the Braves 2-1 as well. So I was not confident even after getting that win that they were going to do what they did over the weekend. But, you know, they have the Braves number right now, and I freaking love it because I hate the Braves. So
yeah, absolutely.
I love that. So that, yeah, the Mets series was just, it was bad. And that's pretty much, like, we don't have to go, like you said, we don't have to detail it much. You guys watched, you saw.
Exactly. All right. I do want to talk about that first game against the Braves, because they were much more competitive this game coming off, you know, no days off after getting swept by the Mets. It was a very competitive game, you know, 2-2 through the seventh. I mean, they were up 2-0 after a, you know, sorely needed CJ Abrams home run. And then, you know, Parker goes out in the seventh, gives up 2 runs, but even still, he gets through 7 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, no walks, 2 strikeouts on just 71 pitches. So that obviously presented a big issue. You just got swept by the Mets. It's 2-2. Your rookie starter gave you 7 great innings. Yeah, his pitch count is not that bad, but he just gave up 2 runs. Like, what do you want to do? And Davey opts to go to his quote-unquote A bullpen directly to Hunter Harvey, right? You don't even need that bridge guy for the seventh. It's just handing the ball from starter directly to Hunter Harvey. And they haven't been able to do that many times this year. So I don't entirely fault him. You know, hindsight's 20/20. Harvey goes in and blows the game. But I just felt like we had to talk about this because so many times Davey makes the wrong decision. And, you know, I guess this could be construed as the wrong decision. Like, I'm sure there's people who wanted to see Parker just go back out there for the eighth, but I don't blame Davey at all for trying, for basically just following the script, like hand the ball to Harvey, Harvey Finnegan.
Yeah,
Harvey,
no, Finnegan, Harvey Finnegan. I'm with you. That one's not on him. We've got issues with Davey doing stuff like that at the wrong times. But in that case, your guy just didn't have it. I mean,
exactly.
That's your guy. Like, you can't say he just didn't have it that day. So. I don't blame him on that one, but there's definitely, I mean, again, the Derek Law thing has been the problem all year, really, is that he always brings Derek Law in with runners on base. And it's just, he's going to allow the runners to score. It just happens because he's not a strikeout dominant type of guy. He lets the ball is going to get put in play. So that's really my biggest pitching problem with Davey this year, because honestly, he's probably better so far this year managing the bullpen than last year and the year before.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In my opinion. Yeah. But that doesn't mean he's good at it.
So the one thing I will say, not necessarily trying to completely undo all the points I just made. What I don't love though is the very next day going back to Harvey in a key situation. I would have I guess there's two trains of thought. It's like either give him a day off to reset or right back out there to try to get it right. I am very much in the former, like, you know, just give you a day. I also just prefer not to, if we can help it, you know, not to go back to back days if possible. But he goes back to Harvey the next day. Harvey gives up the sole run of the game in a 2-1 victory. But obviously not what you want to see from one of your best relievers. Thankfully, Finnegan has been rock solid this year and closed the door. And then the Nats were able to defeat a really good Chris Sale. Chris Sale has been excellent all year long, struck out 10 Nats hitters, which is, you know, not impressive for Chris Sale. He has tons of those stat lines in his career, but like the Nats don't strike out a whole lot just because they're so focused on putting the ball in play. So it just goes to show how dominant Chris Sale was that game, and they were still able to secure the victory on the back of another strong start by Jake Irvin, who's just putting together a stellar campaign and could easily be this team's all-star, you know, representative when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think it's probably him or Gore right now.
Yeah, it's got to be.
It was CJ at the beginning, but obviously he slowed down.
Yeah,
my boy. Yeah, no, he broke his slump against the Braves. So that's good.
He had some big hits.
Yeah, he hit some homers, hit some doubles. The Nats are interesting. They were good against Sale. They're good against Morton, who, like, they've been good against Morton for a couple years, even though he's been really, really good since he got the Braves. And they're good against Zach Wheeler, oddly enough. They're, like, really good against divisional aces sometimes. It's weird. This team's very inconsistent, I think, is the point.
Very inconsistent, yeah.
That's what's so frustrating, is that, like, we see that there's definitely something here. There's like they're 30-35, so like they've done better than we thought. Mm-hmm. And yet there's still like another level I feel like they could get to if they had the right guys up. But yeah, that Braves series though was very good. The weekend, the bats finally woke up, and that was the key for those. I mean, obviously the pitching was very, very good, but you know, you start scoring over 5 runs and you're gonna find more victories that way. So
yep.
They found the homer ball as well in that mm-hmm. series, and that's, I know, you know, everyone kind of already knows, but homers win games.
A little bit, just yeah, a little so bit. Certainly
that happens. Yeah. But yeah, they played. I do like how they really were able to just completely get rid of that Mets series. Like mm-hmm. it seemed like they knew that it sucked. They knew it was embarrassing, but at the end of the day, it happened. Put it to the side and go win against another divisional opponent, and they did do that. So I think, because if they did not, this would not be a very fun episode right now.
No,
we'd be angry.
It would be complete opposite from last week
because we really got embarrassed by the Mets. But putting on the Braves certainly alleviates the pain there.
Yeah. Saturday's game, Gore did a good job bouncing back. It wasn't his best start, but it was a good bounce back start against, you know, the Braves are not at playing well right now, but they're still a good team with quality.
They still
hitters.
Grind out at bats.
Yeah, sure. So it was a good bounce back start from Gore, and the Nats did finally a good job of providing run support earlier in the game, something they hadn't been doing basically all week. So it gave Gore a little bit of a cushion. He got through 5, and then they turned it over to the bullpen. Shocker, Derek Law. and then the Sunday game, I guess it's not the, I almost said rubber match, but it wasn't a rubber match, but the Sunday game, I thought the Nats did well to win an ugly game. That's kind of the way I put it. It's, you know, DJ Hers was better. We talked about that. And, you know, he's gone 4 innings and then 4 1/3 innings in his 2 starts. He kind of got squeezed this one. Probably should have had a better stat line at the end of the day, a couple less walks from getting squeezed by Andy Fletcher. But regardless, like, they were down 2-0 early, and then they exploded for 7 runs after Waldrip, who was making his major league debut for the Braves. I think he went like 9 up, 9 down, or, you know, 9.
Yeah,
or
he
10.
Started very good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So he went 9 up, 9 down, but it was like a caught stealing and a double play. So like he went 9 up, 9 down, and then the Nats exploded for 7 runs in the 4th. So it was a really good job of, you know, suddenly it's 7-2, and then I think it was 8-2 at one point. So I guess it wasn't necessarily an ugly game. It was a clean game for the most part.
It was ugly
part.
When
but
Jordan Weems came in.
Yeah, it was just by ugly. I just mean like a high scoring game. Like you don't have to rely on your entire pitching staff, both starter and relievers, to like give up two runs or less.
Which is good because they did need those runs in the end.
Yeah, exactly. They certainly needed those runs at the end of it, and they got out of it. They almost got out of it without having to use Finnegan, but Finnegan had to come in to clean up Weems' mess.
And he did. He did so efficiently.
Yeah, yeah, very, very efficiently. Like, you know, night and day from Weems to Finnegan.
I gotta just hold up my hand and say I'm sorry to Kyle Finnegan 2 years ago, man.
Oh, I think you're gonna talk about Jordan Weems because I know he was your boy.
Also, I'll take that L.
Like hand up,
hand up taking that L, but also taking Finnegan L for hating on Finnegan for too long. I should have come around
so
quicker, but
I will say it was fun to hate. It was fun to hate on him, like when I was popular.
There's the Twitter thing that happened too that made
it. Right, sure. But like it was, yeah, that's mainly it. But like I was never that vitriolic. I don't even know if that's a word. Like towards my anger towards Finnegan, I always thought he was a good reliever. More so, my problem with him isn't even with him. It's just I thought he should have been traded. But now he's one of the best relievers in the game. So like that's just not even a hyperbole. It's
just statistical a fact at this point, which is kind of crazy. As much as crazy as that is for me to accept.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. So.
Yeah, so
I gotta give him credit.
We can talk about this, and we're gonna talk about it, you know, plenty over the next month or so, you know, as we approach the deadline. But you could get kind of a haul for Kyle Finnegan, and my idea is, as painful as it might be to rip off the Band-Aid, if you package Finnegan and Harvey together to one team, you can get a really nice return. And the thing with Finnegan is he's 32 right now. Yeah. So it's like
They're both in their 30s, I believe.
Yeah. So it's not like you're trading a 26-year-old, a high leverage guy. Like Finnegan's been great, don't get me wrong, but you know, Father Time is undefeated. So
yeah, Father Time's gonna catch up eventually.
Yeah, it's better to get out too early than too late. You're certainly going to be better off value-wise in terms of your return because of it. So certainly something to keep an eye on. The Nats will undoubtedly get calls on Kyle Finnegan. I have no doubt about that.
And this time it's more of a like we probably wanted him moved a couple years ago, and now it's like he kind of has to go. It's like I'm not going to be happy when he's not here, but at the same time, when you look at years of control, he's not going to be a part of this team.
Right,
in that's the competitive window.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's probably got and like you said, rip the Band-Aid off because it's gonna hurt. Mm-hmm. It's gonna hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
Those guys have been pretty good for us.
Right. And like the next month or so, like we talked about it. I guess at the beginning of the episode, all these episodes are blending together. But like, you know, the Nats schedule over the next month is not difficult. Mm-hmm. It's not, but we're gonna learn a lot about this team. Are they beating the teams they should be? I mean, the Nats are under 500 too. So I'm sure these teams are looking at their schedule and the Nats in particular, like, oh, they're under 500. We should beat those teams or that team. So we'll learn a lot over this team. So, you know, this conversation now might be a complete moot point when we're approaching the trade deadline, based on how the next month goes. But it seems to me like the Nats are playing this waiting game, but I'll say preference, because it's not the ideal situation to tank, but their preference is to kind of see what they have, tank, and get one more crack at the lottery and then go for it next year. Because if they get a lottery pick this year, they'll be ineligible for 2025's draft. No, 2026's draft.
Six, yeah.
Yeah, years make no sense.
Yeah, the rules are weird.
Yeah, so it's like they'll be ineligible for a lottery pick in the following year, regardless of the record. It's kind of why we got boned this year, despite our terrible record, or less than record last year.
It's also part of the reason why I've been like, hey, man, this NL is weak. Let's go win. Because, like, the rules kind of, they've since the Nats have had to be in the rebuild, the rules have changed to hurt tanking, which is a good thing overall. But,
yeah, like, I agree.
Not in our situation.
The one thing I'll say about this year in particular, though, is like there's so many teams that are lottery teams this draft that will be ineligible next year. So it's like if the Nats are bad this year, they're going to get leapfrogged ahead of teams just because of teams' ineligibility to pick in the lottery again. Yeah. So it's like, it's not the worst strategy. I just wish they would be a little bit more transparent about it. Especially when it comes to things like James Wood, you know, injury for sure. Notwithstanding, but, this next month is going to show us a lot. So I think if that's the route they want to go, then they will trade Finnegan and Harvey because it doesn't match their timeline. They are trying to lose some more games to increase the lottery odds. And then 2025, they'll make the moves they feel they need to make to be competitive, because you gain nothing by performing poorly.
So yeah, and again, like, the worst thing you can do is stay
still. Nothing. Yep. Buy. I mean, I don't want them to buy too much, but you know, either go for it or sell. But
the in between is not a thing. Not, it doesn't even exist.
Exactly. By go for it, I mean like just shed Eddie Rosario, shed Joey Gallo. They're not going to provide anything. Call up James Wood. Hell, call up Dylan Cruz if you feel he's ready.
Maybe look for like a cheap power bat.
Yeah, maybe. Like.
But nothing like crazy. Like you can't trade one of your big dudes for him.
So. I mean, I just throwing a name like a JD Martinez maybe.
Yeah, well, he might actually have some looks just because he's been pretty solid.
I know it's in division.
He's older, like, so.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's just, you know, someone that came to the top of my mind.
Yeah, obviously they're not going to go all in for to try and like, make the wild card.
Yeah, splash
and,
like, at the deadline. But
but like a low-key move, I'd be cool with.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But again, we'll talk about when the time comes. The other thing that they really could do, and I wanted to mention this week, didn't happen in the major leagues at all. It happened in the minor leagues because they sent down Riley Adams, called up Drew Millis, which makes sense roster-wise. Drew Millis is the far better, best of the bunch in terms of defensive abilities at catcher. Keibert Ruiz has not been playing well at all. Riley Adams is just not suited to be a backup guy. He needs regular at-bats. So they sent Riley Adams down, called up Drew Millis. Millis got a couple starts this week, performed fine. Like, not great, but not terrible.
He performed fine. Yeah, he only got a couple starts. So, you know, we got to give him a shot.
Sure.
For sure.
But Riley Adams went on an immediate tear in AAA.
Yeah, he like immediately
three home
had
runs in, like,
game.
Two games. He's OPS above 1,000. Like, he is tearing it up right now because he's getting regular playing time. So that begs the question that we continually ask is, why is he not playing first base? And it seems like I need to pull it up what exactly his percentage played, if he's still getting catching reps or if he is playing first base. But Davey alluded to the fact, or it was Davey or Rizzo, said they wanted him to learn first base, and that's part of the reason they were sending him down. So hopefully that puts a fire or puts Gallo, Meneses, Rosario, whoever on notice that, you know, their time is short, especially now that Riley Adams is hitting well.
Yeah. And for Riley as well, the whole thing with his bat is like his crazy exit velos and his barrel rates. Like,
yeah,
he's able to hit the ball extremely hard, but he's not able to reach that potential when he's sitting a lot. And when he's having to deal with catching duties, when he's, you know, because you had to put in a lot of work as a catcher. Even if you're a bad defensive catcher, you still have to put in the work. So just, you know, if they can kind of take that load off of him and say, listen, you're going to be playing first base, you're going to be DHing. We want you to focus on the bat. And that's something I think they should do, because his bat does have really good potential. And if he can play first base, then, you know, you have at least something. As a first, like, there's really nothing for the Nats first base wise. They're probably going to have to look towards signing a free agent next year, because, you know, Adams actually working out at first base is kind of a pipe dream, but it could happen. But yeah, first base is definitely a weak spot for this team depth wise, and I would definitely look at them. They should look at potentially signing first baseman next year.
Well, we could bring in the guy we should have brought in this year and get Rhys Hoskins. If he's going to opt out.
He'll probably opt out. Yeah. Could also see a Josh Bell reunion at some point.
Yeah. Cool. I mean,
that's like kind of a lower key move, but
yeah. Same time. I mean, but even still.
Better than Meneses.
Right. The popular option right now on Nat's Twitter is Christian Walker. He'll be older, but he's having a great year this year, and I wouldn't be opposed to that as well, because again, there's no one immediate in the mm-hmm. wing waiting in the wings to take over that spot or to be the first baseman of the future or anything like that. So it's
Walker on a 2 or 3 year deal, down for that.
Yeah, and like I wouldn't be overly concerned about what the contract looks like, because
he's also probably not going to get the AAV just because he's like 34 already. So I think it will be affordable for where the Nats currently are.
Yeah. So Riley Adams still, as if you're watching, I'm very distracted, but Riley Adams is still catching in Triple A. So either he's really bad at first base, which he might be, or they just don't really care to make him a first baseman. so it's like, yeah, that's a little disappointing. It is funny to see the current statistics for like some familiar faces, like Thad Ward with a 6.89 ERA in AAA.
I liked him. I liked that.
Yeah, I was. I hate to like dunk on you, but I told you so.
Yeah,
Trey Lipscomb, 5.99.
No command.
Yeah. Alex Call batting sub 200. Carter Kieboom, I guess he's fine. But yeah, it's funny to see all these familiar faces. Also, not easy to find AAA stats, apparently. Like trying to figure out the position splits inside. It's just whatever. Mm. It took me a minute. But anyways, back to the Nats. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they approach next offseason. Obviously, we have a lot of time in baseball left to be played before we get to that point. But it's just kind of indicative of where they are right now. They're 30 and 35, which is very respectable. And no matter how much people may laugh, they're very much in the wild card spot. They're a game and a half back of the third wild card spot, and the teams ahead of them are not all that convincing. It's, the Cubs, the Reds, and the Giants are all tied for that third wild card spot. They're 32 and 34. And then just outside looking in, it's the Cardinals, the Pirates, and the Diamondbacks. Like, outside of the Diamondbacks, none of those teams are all that, scary. And the Diamondbacks, yeah, they did it last year, but they haven't looked at all like the team from last year or this year. So who's to say, the Nats can't leapfrog them? I mean, we're playing them this week, next week.
We're going to see some teams that are in this grouping over the next month. And if you start beating them, then you got to at least consider going for a wild card spot.
Right. So yeah, it's very interesting to see. But grand scheme of things, the Nats are just a wildly inconsistent team. Yeah. And so it's like, how inconsistent are they going to be? Are they going to be inconsistent to where they find themselves in a wild card, battle in late August, September? Or are they going to be inconsistent to the point where they're losing series they shouldn't be, like against the Mets, mm-hmm. and then they ultimately fall out of it?
Yeah.
Because their pitching is what's leading them, and it's been great, and it's certainly a viable strategy as well. But if the offense does not get going, then this, in my mind, it's not sustainable, like with injuries and fatigue and just the dog days of summer and the young guys in particular, like just exceeding.
Yeah, eventually innings, you're going to run out of innings here. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Exceeding innings that, or getting to a point in innings pitch that they've never gotten to before. And then again, the fatigue sets in, or just the concern for their long-term future sets in, especially with all the injuries we're seeing around baseball. So we're in a very crucial stretch.
I was about to say the next 2-3 weeks are going to tell you a lot about the direction of the 2024 Nationals.
Yeah, absolutely. But we will be here to cover it all. The one last thing I'll end the episode on this. I absolutely love that the fire Darnell Cole's discourse is getting louder and louder.
To the point where it actually got on Nats chat.
It did.
That is a step for us.
I'm hope. Granted, though, the Masson people are going to defend the team.
Even mention it is
right,
like something.
Right. So keep the pressure on. Bullying works. So hopefully Coles will not be here much longer. We'll see. But that does it for this episode. We'll be back next week. I can't wait to see what the Nats,
where the Nats are. I know, right?
It's for us this week. Just basing the law of averages, I'm going to predict the Nats to go 0-6 this week.
So they're going to go 6-0.
Exactly.
What's going to happen?
Exactly.
I'll go split because I'm boring.
Yeah, yeah, it's the most boring thing you could do. But yeah, anyways,
I'm boring, but I want to maybe be right.
Yeah, exactly. For once, for yeah. once. All right, that does it for this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. In the meantime, District Baseball everywhere. District BSB on Twitter. Be sure to like, subscribe, comment, review, all that good stuff. Make sure you're plugged in for all the things we have coming out throughout the week. Again, we'll be back next week. And in the meantime, let's go next.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.